Tuesday, March 1st, 2011.
Yeah.
Welcome, members, to the meeting today. Today, we're going to be discussing two different things. I guess the DNR will be finishing up their presentation, but first, we're going to start out with the Met Council. Regional Parks presentation of the governor's budget recommendations. So I believe it's Arnie, is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Zeffirud?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program at the Metro Council, and I wanted to present the governor's budget recommendation for operations and maintenance of the Metro Regional Park System. There's a one-page handout that on the one side has the budget recommendation, and on the flip side is a map illustration of the park system. It is a partnership between the Metro Council and 10 regional park agencies, Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Washington, Scott, and Ramsey counties, plus Three Rivers Park District, the Minneapolis Park Board, and the City of St. Paul and the City of Bloomington. And collectively, they manage 54,600 acres of parkland, 231 miles of connecting regional trails, and they serve about 38 million visits, not visitors, but visits a year based on our research. The governor's recommendation for operations and maintenance is based upon longstanding appropriations since 1985, where the state has supported some of funding of local property taxes and user fees, providing some state assistance in addition to those revenue streams to operate and maintain the park system. The governor's recommendation is that the general fund appropriation be cut 40%, or $1.428 million a year, as part of his package for the budget. However, there's another revenue source, and that's from the Natural Resources Fund. A portion of the lottery proceeds go into a statutorily dedicated account, and that remains unchanged. So the net reduction of the governor's recommendation is 16% for the biennium. When we do the calculations as to what this means for each park agency, it ranges between $15,000 and $365,000 a year. And that is based upon a formula and statute that we use to come up with the amount each agency would receive from the appropriation. Obviously, this does affect operations and maintenance of the park system. It would vary from agency to agency. There are folks here from several of the park agencies that I just mentioned who could respond to questions from you if you so desire. But that, Mr. Chair, is my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Mr. Zeffirud, I've got a couple questions. One would be, maybe it'll take the other members to do this, I'm not sure, but are there fees charged for any of the parks? Give us a little idea of their any collection of any fees for participants in the parks. And my other question would be the number that you come up with the amount of annual visits. How do you gauge that? How do you know that?
Mr. Chair, in regards to your first question, yes, there are user fees collected for renting group picnic shelters, for camping, for vehicle entrances at three of the park agencies where they have a reciprocal agreement between them. Carver, Anoka, and Washington counties have a vehicle permit fee system, as well as other special activity fees for programs. It varies from agency to agency, but there's a significant amount collected from visitors that go into operations and maintenance of the system. As to the second question, we do a statistically valid sampling of people entering parks and trails. We do this every summer. I'm involved with determining the schedule for when those counts are collected. We do a uniformed protocol for this. And in 2008, we did a person-to-person interviews of several thousand park visitors to determine when they visited the parks in the winter, spring, and fall, and use that as multipliers because we collect our data in the summer. We also use 4 years' worth of data and average that over a four-year period to come up with the estimate. So it takes into account variations in weather from year to year as well as closures of park entrances from year to year. So that's how we do it. And we've been doing that since, the late 1970s.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Steffrud, what is your overall budget for your Parks and Trails system?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the agencies reported for the 2010 budget, not expenditures, but for the budget, it was $90 million approximately. The 2009 actual expenditures was approximately $86 million.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, this seems like a really huge cut to the Metro Regional Parks, considering how many people they serve. Can you tell me, Mr. Steffrud, what is the most heavily visited regional park?
Yes. I do have our most recent version of the use estimate here, and I believe it would be the Minneapolis Chain of Lakes Park, which had in 2009 4,860,800 visits. And when I talk about the Chain of Lakes, I mean Harriet, Calhoun, Lake of the Isles together as one park unit.
And then, Mr. Chairman?
Senator, go ahead.
What's next, then, after that?
The second most visited is Como Park. That includes the zoo and the conservatory, and there were 3,414,300 visits in 2009.
Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up.
Do you have information about where the people that visit these two parks, are they all local, Minneapolis and St. Paul? Are they regional? Are they statewide? Or do you have that breakdown?
Mr. Steffrud.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, we do have the breakdown by park unit. I don't have that data with me.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, for the system as a whole, approximately 40% of the visitors to the parks come from outside the seven-county region. Outside the region, I want to back up. It's approximately 4% come from outside the region, but then of the remainder, approximately 36% come from another part of the region and recreate somewhere else. For instance, a person who lived in the Three Rivers Park District jurisdiction and went to a park in Washington County would be a non-local visitor. And that's a part of that 36%.
But, Mr. Chairman, do you know specifically for these two parks, these can't be just Minneapolis and St. Paul
No,
residents.
That's for
these
the system as a whole. And
these
I do,
numbers are too big.
I have that data, but I don't have it with me. And that would be from this 2008 study that we did.
Well, it would be interesting to know because my information from the past, because I'm familiar with this, is that there are a lot of outstate and out-of-region, certainly out of the city people that must visit these parks because these numbers are so huge.
Okay. Senator Kielash first.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Steffrud, one of the things we talked about is the ability to charge fees. And the two parks that were just mentioned, because of the nature of the parks and that they're in the middle of the city and they have no gates or entrances, are very limited into how they can raise money. And I'm just wondering if there is a formula or something that means that those facilities that are – both facilities are two of the heaviest used facilities, but they have the least ability to be able to collect fees for the parks and the cities. Both of the cities are doing an awful lot to make sure those parks are maintained with city taxes and stuff. Can you just expand on that a little bit and give us an idea how that is broken down?
Mr. Chair, Senator, again, the agency involved in maintaining that park unit would be best able to answer your question about how much they collect in fees as part of their overall revenue stream for their budget. I do not have that data. But in regards to your point about the ability to collect, they do charge for group picnic shelter rentals. That's a fairly common a fee that's charged at many parks, and both parks at Como and at Chain of Lakes would be one of the fees that would be collected. There are also concession fees and arrangements with concessionaires where they get a percentage of that revenue in both of those park units as well.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I asked my question quite right. What I meant in the terms of allocation to these parks that have some have the ability to collect entrance fees, others have just the concession fees, like you said, is there in the formulation for how these parks are allocated funds any consideration for the fact that they cannot charge fees on entrance?
Mr. Chair and Senator, no, that specific factor is not taken into account. The law requires us to distribute this money through three points. 40% is based upon the number of visits each agency hosts. 40% is based upon the amount of expenditures each agency spends in the previous calendar year to operate and maintain their portion of the park system. And 20% is based upon the amount of land they manage. However, we have these large park reserves where 80% of that property is basically untouched. It's wildlife habitat and used for environmental education. That land is only given one-fourth weight compared to an acre of developed recreation lands in the regional parks.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You, Senator Pappas had alluded to the number of people coming to the parks and where they're coming from, and assuming that some of these are coming from outside the region, have you done any studies to see what the economic impact is as far as the number of dollars that you're generating in economic development efforts as far as from having your parks and having people come to them?
Mr. Steffer.
Mr. Chair and Senator, no, we do not have any economic impact study specifically. We do have a number based upon, again, this 2008 study of people coming from outside the region and outside the state. We could probably, you know, give you a multiplier, working with the Department of Tourism to come up with a multiplier number and respond back to you on that question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Gazelka.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This isn't scientific, but again, to Senator Pappas' response, you know, my family's from Brainerd. We go down to Como Zoo probably once a year. And I know there's lots of people throughout our area that love that zoo, and I would have been happy to pay $5 a person or whatever, or 10 or whatever. It's a great place.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, they are accepting donations now at the door. So you're welcome to leave your donation.
We give them.
Question I have, Mr. Steffrud, is what kind of cuts do the governor's budget show for the transit portion of your budget?
Mr. Chair, I unfortunately do not have that data.
My other question is, looking at recovering some of those dollars here under the alternatives considered, and maybe it's just more of a comment, and I'll throw this out for the members with regards to supplanting here from the Parks and Trails budget. If somebody were to ask you, how would you respond to that, I guess? Maybe that's a question.
Well, Mr. Chair, in regards to the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund, that's a constitutionally dedicated account, which is not supposed to replace traditional funding sources. The issue is that traditional funding source shrinking? And it appears to be. But if the percentage from that traditional funding source remains the same, let's say 1% was devoted for parks in the previous pre-recession situation, since the amendment was enacted in 2008, and you compare what's proposed for spending now, if those are the same on a percentage basis, one could argue that it's not supplanting. Under the alternatives considered point, it's the lottery in lieu of sales tax collections, which is a statutorily dedicated account specifically for metro regional parks. And as points out, if there's an unobligated amount in that fund, it could be used to increase or make up for some of this deficit. But that is not the Parks and Trails Legacy account. It's a separate account entirely.
Everybody clear on that? Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, the DNR will be Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer to finish the presentation of the governor's budget recommendations. And members, we have this in our packet, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, yes. Working off the same documents that we had previously, you'll have a packet that has this slide.
There you go.
If everybody can see that. Packet of the presentation that looks like this with two slides per page. I'll be working off of that. And also, members, just for your recollection, you also do have a detailed package with all of our individual fact sheets for our budget. Cover letter from Commissioner Landwehr on there. If you need more information or contact number for the director or the appropriate staff, that is on there as well. Mr. Chairman, we did finish most of our, what we've talked to date is our general fund reduction. We've talked about some of our major change items that we've had, the hunting and fishing initiative, our aquatic invasive species surcharge account. The Clean Water Legacy Funds, Mr. Chairman, and the Parks and Trails Funds that are represented in the governor's budget. It's my understanding you're going to have a separate hearing on those proposals.
Yes.
So you have a slide on here. I'm not going to go into this in great detail. This does recommend closely continuing on the work that we did last biennium with the Clean Water Fund. You can see it also has $2.7 million in there to finish the work of the LIDAR, the high-resolution elevation data program that we're working out to collect this information that's used for flood hazard mitigation and conservation water management and just a lot of other things. The Parks and Trails Fund, Mr. Chairman, we did have the celebration back February 14th with the legacy plan that was directed to us to complete, which will be driving our proposal within the governor's budget. The recommendations are very similar to what was there last biennium at 43% state, 43% metro, 16% outstate or regional parks and trails of regional and statewide significance. And on that note, Mr. Chairman, the information within the BBS system or the budgeting system has a typo in it. It does say, you don't have anything that says that now, but it says the grant program here, this Parks and Trails grant program is only for outstate. That's not the case, and the governor's budget language will reflect that, and the changes in the system will reflect that. This grants program, which we're recommending at a little bit over $6 million per year, is for parks and trails of regional and statewide significance, but it is not eligible for the Department of Natural Resources. So you may have heard some confusion or some frustration from stakeholders about that. I wanted just to clarify that for you, and we'll go into these proposals in greater detail when we have those presentations before you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'm going to jump to the forestry part of our proposal. And if you go to the slide presentation, I believe it's page 16 is where this starts at. Yes, the forestry presentation starts on page 16. For some reason I go right there, but I'll get to the forestry slide here. You can see, just to remind members, the forestry budget, these are expenditures from last biennium, $49 million from the general fund, 15% or $26.4 million from the natural resources fund, the forest management investment account. There are, you can see, outdoor heritage funds here, Mr. Chairman. That was for the Upper Mississippi conservation easement in Senator Saxog's district, protecting over 187,000 acres of forest land in perpetuity for fish, wildlife, habitat, wetland protection, and also for recreation and public access. The special revenue funds come from a variety of sources. You'll also see a small piece of Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund from the LCCMR, and General Fund Fire, Mr. Chairman, at $22 million. The strategic objectives we talked about here, first and foremost, fire management, then forest land management, cooperative forest management activities, our core programs, and our Sustainable Forest Resource Act implementation, working with the Forest Resource Council, falls into this division as well.
Mr. Meyer, the general fund, $49.1 million, can you just give a general idea of what those expenditures are? It's just real, a one or two sentence.
Mr. Chairman, basically that a large bulk of those dollars are for our silvicultural management activities, putting wood up, marking wood, doing the... It's timber management, basically. I can provide you more detail, and I think we talked about that within our overview presentation that we had, Mr. Chairman. Let me just see if I have it here. Really
basically, quick. It's fair to say the general operating of forest management.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, that's fine.
The forest management is really about a couple things. making sure that we have the infrastructure available to harvest the wood, the roads, the bridges, things of that nature, the backbone of that access into the forest, making sure we have the staff to manage our forest in the sustainable activities. We do have a large certification process that we've talked about, where we have two third-party organizations that review our management activities, make sure that they're sustainably managed. Our forest work that we do is sustainable, because a lot of our purchasers or the people who buy the end products now want certified timber. You go to Home Depot, for example, there's SFIA FSC, thank you, certified wood that's out there. Time Warner, for example, only will purchase paper made from certified sources. So we need to make sure that our forests are basically giving, lack of a better term, the good housekeeping seal of approval for the way we're managing our timber. And that's a big part of which drives our activities that are funded there. Several of the change items here, Mr. Chairman. The first one.
Excuse me, Senator Pelosi.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chair, sorry, Mr. Meyer, on that, when you broke it down on the $49 million from the general fund, that is for the certification primarily?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelosh, the certification process is a very small part of that, but the activities that lead up to us being able to be certified are things that fall under our management.
Okay.
The way we do harvest, the way we post our timber, the way we work with the Forest Resource Council on riparian buffers, for example, on timber sales, things of that nature, which drive and they can say, yes, Minnesota's forests are being managed as one of the best forests within the country.
Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, can you tell me about how many acres per year a forester is anticipated to manage? Is that sort of kind of an idea?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I don't have that with me right now. In our comments that we're preparing back for you, we'll make sure that you have that information in there. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Go ahead.
Members, moving back to the change item now, and you'll see this on page 18. Top of page 18. What we're asking for here is access to more dollars within the forest management investment account. And I need to just step back a little bit from a previous comment I made. Timber off of state-acquired lands, the revenues off of those timbers are deposited within the forest management investment account. The revenues off of CONCON lands, which is a category of lands that the state received in exchange for solvency, basically, of the seven Northwest counties back in the 20s and 30s. Those revenues are split 50% into the Forest Management Investment Account, 50% into the general fund. School trust land activities, when we harvest school trust lands, we certify our costs against those activities. About half of those costs that we certify each year, go back to the FMIA to cover our management activities. And the other half of those costs go to the general fund that cover fire and administrative costs. It's something that we'll probably get into discussing here at some point in time, but I want to make sure people understand what the FMIA is made up of. So it's made up of the timber revenue off of all of the state forest land, the acquired DNR state land that we harvest. Those revenues go in there. This is a dedicated account that is used for the purposes of forest management activities. It was a step in the right direction that we implemented about 6 years ago to help get forestry activities off of the general fund and really work off of the revenues that we have. What we're asking for here is an increase of the appropriation and also for a statutory appropriation of these dollars so we can spend those dollars each year rather than come back and adjust or decrease the budget out of these activities.
Senator Saxhorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, back to FMIA and what we did 6 years ago, you give us, from that point on, just a little brief history, as the chairman would say, a couple of sentences here about what happened after we did that. We thought we had the answer using FMIA funds, and then something fell out of something, and
Mr.
Chair, Senator Saxog, I might take a couple more than a couple sentences, but I'll do the best I can. When this account was established, the timber market was very much on the increase. Timber was probably $100 or more a cord at public auction. So the revenues were forecasted, the revenues coming in were very high. And as we do, we forecast available receipts based off of last year's revenues. We forecasted more money than was available in the account. And previously, the past two biennia, we've had to unallot or reduce the spending out of this account. Timber now is much less than that, probably $20 to $30 a cord if we're lucky. Yeah, but we have been putting more wood up. So there's a balance in the account. It's back to being stable once again. And we're asking to access some of those dollars for our forest management activities. And going back to Senator Kelosh's questions there, you can see under the background, this increased FMIA investment will provide funding for four critical areas: pre-commercial treatments of timberlands, thinning the wood, making sure the trees can grow better, faster, stronger, updates to our forest stand inventory, or understanding what our forests are made up of, maintaining those state forest roads, and making sure that we're able to maintain our role in the timber economy of providing the resources for those loggers in all of your districts that are so dependent on this, as the federal wood isn't coming off or being put up to meet the demand, and the private landowner of these private forest lands, not many of them are putting their timber up right now because they aren't receiving a payment that they think is worthwhile to cut those trees down. So we need to make sure that the state is providing that stable source of feedstock for not only the loggers, but for the secondary timber market as well. Mr. Chair, if there's no other questions, I'm going to continue on to the next change item. This is an appropriation. This change item deals with Minnesota Forest for the Future Conservation Easement Stewardship Account. The easement that I spoke of, that Upper Mississippi Forest for the Future easement, the Outdoor Heritage Fund also appropriated to the DNR some money for the management and monitoring and enforcement of that easement. $750,000 was appropriated to the DNR, but it was not deposited into an account or set up so we could access it. What this proposal will allow us to do is to create a permanent account within the Natural Resources Fund for the purpose of conservation easement monitoring and enforcement. And then we are asking for a statutory appropriation of these funds each year for easement management. Approximately $30,000 a year would be spent out of this account to do the monitoring and enforcement related to our Forest for the Future easements that are out there right now, making sure that we're protecting the public's investment in these conservation easements and that the properties continue to provide the benefits or those sticks that we purchased out of the bundle, making sure that our bundle is being protected, that we're getting what we pay for and that people aren't encroaching or developing or anything like that is occurring. The next change item, Mr. Chairman and members, deals with the minimum maintenance roads that I spoke of previously. This would be an appropriation out of the all-terrain vehicle account of $200,000 per year to provide for maintenance and upkeep of our minimum maintenance forest roads that are designated as part of the all-terrain vehicle trail system that we have throughout the state. If you've ever been on these roads, and hopefully we can get you out there this summer if you haven't been, the network we have is pretty amazing, and I don't know if Senator Gerlach is actually here, but we were on a forest road tour one day, and in the bus, this was a couple of years ago, people were like, wow, you can drive on these roads in the forest, and you can camp here? People were just kind of amazed at the network we have. We have thousands of miles of these roads, and a lot of them are used for ATV travel. You can drive your truck on them as well, but what we have here is a Class 2 ATV, and a lot of those, the steering wheel side-by-side models, they're called Class 2 ATVs, use these roads, and they want to see them upkept and graded and graveled and things like that. So these dollars would be used to do that, maintaining the roads within the state forest that are part of the ATV trail system. So this is really a mutually beneficial program that we have here.
Mr. Meyer, do you have any of those minimum maintenance roads blocked off, shut off for ATV in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, members, they close down seasonally due to weight restrictions, just like any other road, or seasonal breakup, as it's kind of traditionally referred to, or we do have the ability to close them down if we have a torrential rainfall, for example, and they need to be shut down temporarily. But for the most part, the goal and the management of them are for public access and keep them open.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Skoye.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, to the point about the ATV usage on the forest roads, it's different in the state forest than it is in the WMAs with regard to whether these roads are left open. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoye, yes.
And Mr. Chair, I think the areas that have the forest roads that are closed tend to be in the wildlife management areas and up in the northwest corner of the state. Some of that's been a little controversial, I'll say.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoye, thank you for that reminder. The WMA system, ATVs are prohibited within the WMA system. However, we are working very closely with some of our counties in the northwest area of the state to get those areas where there have been roads going through them to get that issue resolved, because they are traditional forms of access routes, but the concern is keeping people on those routes and not in the WMAs. So we're working closely with Kitson County in some areas that they want to see open. I think we're very close to a resolution on that issue. We're coming closer every day to the resolution.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, do the ATV clubs have a dedicated fund like a snowmobile club, so that if some of those roads are being used heavily by ATVs, that some of that maintenance might be provided by some of their funds as well as the DNR funds, or am I getting those mixed up?
Mr.
Meyer. Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, no, the ATV, this is very similar to the snowmobile account. There's an ATV grant and aid trail system that we maintain and work with the local clubs. Actually, we just had a successful, I think, is it 70 miles, Senator Saxog, or 90 miles in Aiken County with the local units of government and stakeholders there that we've established. Great success story for the grant and aid trail system. This is part of the state system that is a backbone for that grant and aid system. Right. Mr. Chairman, members, Thank you. And we are working with ATVAM on this proposal, and we'll talk about some others that we're working with the stakeholders with as well as when we get there. Mr. Chair, this next change item within forestry deals with the native plant community mapping, and its dollars from the Heritage Enhancement Account, which is a pot of money that's available to be appropriated out for activities. It's $1 million FY12 and $1 million in FY13 to provide us with a one-time appropriation to enhance our ecological classification system work that we do. It's a mouthful to say, but it's really looking at the benefits or what can grow, the native plant community mapping, we call it, but looking at what's growing on an acre of forest land, making sure we understand what it is and making sure it's the best thing to be growing there. So you can see part of it's to accelerate our national plant community mapping. The next piece of this is to help us take that information and develop these silvicultural interpretations, or in layman terms, telling us what to plant where for management based on this information. So what we're doing is looking at the soil characteristics, the water characteristics, all of the environmental attributes of this land, and making sure we're reforesting these areas with the highest and best and plants that are going to grow into the future. As we all know, forest management is measured in decades, not months or years like any other crops are. So what the expected outcomes related to this are, about 100,000 acres of native plant communities are identified and mapped each year. And then to help us develop the silvicultural interpretations for management, or telling us what to plant when based on this information, so that when we come back here in 40 years or whatever that rotation is, we're making the best investments now for future generations within our forests.
Mr. Meyer, do you do this work in conjunction with the university at all?
Mr. Chair, we work very closely with the Forest Resource Council, universities, and educational outreach wherever we can. This work would be done by our foresters, but, you know, working with the academia out there to make sure that we understand what we're doing as well is important. Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions, I'm going to move into the Parks and Trails presentation. And you'll see that starts on page 20. Just a reminder here, the Parks and Trails FY10-11 budget, Mr. Chairman, is about $196 million, made up of two big pieces, the Natural Resources Fund which is the monies that we generate through the system from camping, entrance fees, selling of firewood, other things that are out there at the gift stores and whatnot, and the general fund at 41.5%. The two of them make up over 65-70% of the budget for the parks and trails system. In addition, there's a small piece of game and fish, $4.4 million. The Parks and Trails Fund, or that $36.6 million, represents the appropriations that we received last biennium from the dedicated funding source, and that were earmarked for specific projects that we'll discuss at a later date. Special revenue funds come from different sources of funding that are out there that go into the account. Federal funding, and $3.9 million from the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund last biennium. The strategic objectives you can see we've talked about, connecting people to the outdoors, accelerating the management of our natural lands and recreational environments, and investing in partnerships, processes, and people. This is really important to make sure people understand what they're getting, where they're going, and that we have a system that is the highest and best up-to-date information that we can provide for them.
Mr. Meyer, just back up to the pie chart again. The special revenue fund, can you just go over that real quickly as to what?
Mr. Chairman, part of this, most of the funds here, a couple of examples are in statute. The Douglas Lodge, which is up in Itasca State Park, there's a Douglas Lodge account. So the revenue from the restaurant there, for example, people staying in the lodge are deposited in this account. The working capital account, which I'll get to here in a few seconds, we have a change item related to that, is deposited here as well. Last session, we changed the working capital account, allowed for natural resource management, dollars made off of natural resource management activities to be deposited with the working capital account. Several years ago, we had a huge blowdown storm up at St. Croix State Park, knocked down a lot of trees, many, many acres of trees. The salvage value of those trees was over $400,000, which was deposited into the general fund then, and then the department had to go out and seek or use other funds that we had for the removal and the restoration of that forest within the state park system. Now those dollars are deposited within the special revenue fund. So these are special dedicated sources of funding throughout statute that are deposited within the special revenue fund. You'll see, like if you looked at the Douglas Lodge language, it says these funds are deposited within a special revenue account. I know Mr. Mueller may have a more detailed list with him, but I don't have that with me right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, there are several change items related to state parks that we'd like to discuss with you at this time. The first one deals with the state park dedicated account. This is one of those accounts that's there where our money goes into, and it's legislatively or statutorily, not statutorily, directly appropriated biennially to the Department of Natural Resources. Through our outreach and marketing activities, our entrepreneurial management, we've increased the revenues in state parks by 14%. With that, our maintenance and visitor service costs have gone up as well. What we're asking for is to have access to those dollars that we've generated and that were deposited into this account because of this growth, so to speak. So there's a balance within this account. We're asking for it to be appropriated to us for these activities. And also we're asking that we have the ability to have these funds statutorily appropriated so that we would be able to use them for our management activities as they come up rather than come back here on an annual or biannual basis and asking for appropriations or, in some cases, decreases, as we talked about within. Mr. Chairman, you can see the outcomes here. It helped us meet our customer expectations and maintain our visitor services that we have, and then just continue to provide the most up-to-date and entrepreneurial services to our customers that are out there. This is a proposal, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, if there are no questions, I'll move on to the next change item. Within the working capital account that we spoke of last session, the change you can see here, directed revenues from the sale of natural resources within state parks to the working capital account, but capped that spending at $25,000 per year. We haven't spent any money out of the account right now, but what we're looking to do is remove the cap on the state parks working capital account because we don't know how much money is going to go in here, but when it does go into this account, we need the ability to access those funds to deal with that resource management issue on the other side of it. So we're asking to have that cap lifted and then have access to those funds. The expected outcomes will allow us to expand and accelerate our natural resource management efforts. These dollars won't be used to pay for the visitor center operation hours or staff time to clean the campgrounds or things like that. These dollars will be used for that natural resource management related activities, native prairie management restoration, timber work, reforestation activities, things of that nature when we talk about natural resource management. Mr. Chairman, related to Senator Carlson's questions about
Senator Telash has a question.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, these are things, all these things are done within the state park system. Do I have that right? So that it doesn't go anywhere else, but it's dedicated to the state park. So that means managing it, opening trails or just restoring parts of the parks for visitors. And is it capital improvements in the park as well?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kulash, those are great questions, and thank you for that. Allow me to clarify. The working capital account, these activities will only be used for the natural resource management activities. So not capital equipment on a building, new windows or things like that. It wouldn't be asphalting or repaving a trail. It would be perhaps managing the native prairie or restoring a prairie next to the trail. But primarily, it's the example I use within the St. Croix State Forest, providing the opportunity, the funding to reforest that area within the state. If we would have been able to do this, we would have had funds available to reforest that area within St. Croix State Forest, St. Croix State Park, I'm sorry. If you ever get up there, it's pretty amazing to see just the area that was devastated by the windstorm, and now it's coming back through natural regeneration. But we need to have that ability to manage those sites with those revenues. We're doing some demonstration work within parts of Itasca State Park, for example. It would be great to be able to use the revenues that are there from a demonstration tree stand thinning to show people how our thinning activities really do improve the forest, to be able to restore some of the other parts within the forest within that state park.
Thank you.
It's those types of activities that we're doing. Mr. Chairman, moving on, the snowmobile fund change item here, just as we talked about revenues being generated for parks because of our entrepreneurial activities. Mother Nature's entrepreneurial, I haven't thought about that one this winter, but her entrepreneurial wisdom this winter for snowmobiling in
Minnesota.
Glad
you're able to
Minnesota.
Put that into your entrepreneurial stuff that's going on today. Yeah,
all that snow has to be worth something, right? In outstate Minnesota, I think there's a lot of people really enjoying it with their sleds. But the past couple of years, we've had great snowmobiling. So we've sold more trail passes. More snowmobiles have been registered. Oftentimes it's cyclical when a person may or may not register their snowmobile. And the fund balance in the account shows that. What we're looking for here is to actually access some of those dollars that people have paid for these purposes and get them back on the ground, increase the level of effort within the grant and aid funding program, and also maintain the current level of effort on our state snowmobile trails as well. The early snow, the amount of snow we have, has driven up everybody's grooming costs. So this will be able to help pay for that into the future. Mr. Chairman, similar to that, we're asking for an appropriation increase out of the ATV or All-Terrain Vehicle Fund. These are dollars that have been paid for by registered users to use that trail system. And we're asking for an appropriation of increase to fund the ATV trail system. And the outcomes here are related to the increased maintenance of our ATV trails, making sure that they're taken care of, maintained, and providing more training and oversight for the grant and aid program as well, making sure that the trail ambassador program, for example, is up to speed and running as it should be expected.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, in terms of ATV trails, when we're talking about the increases and the like, in the last 6 years, how much of an increase have we seen in miles of ATV trails? Do you have any idea? Or, I mean, even you know, our state parks, they were inventoried, you know, so they could be used or closed or whatever. Do you have any idea how many miles of trails we have and how that's increased in the recent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxon, I don't have the growth information, but I can get that for you. But what we have right now The Parks and Trails Division of the Department of Natural Resources manages about 1,000 miles of ATV trails. And then in addition to that, we have a grant and aid trail program, which consists of about another 100 or another 1,000 miles. So we have approximately 2,000 miles of trails within the state, half our state within the state forest system, half our grant and aid systems or connector systems that feed into the state system. The one that we spoke of up in Aiken is a grant and aid trail system that was very successful. There's other clubs that throughout the state are really great partners with us, and they help us provide that connectivity. In northern and southern Minnesota, it's a way of life to be able to get around on these things. It's not having to put them on a trailer and haul them somewhere. It's opening your garage door, starting it up, and going. Snowmobile is the same way. So it's making sure we have that connector system so people can get to where they want to go recreationally. And sometimes, in the case of northern Minnesota, to work as well. I mean, it's a great place where we've come from 10 years ago to where we are today. And these dollars will help us maintain that. So,
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, if there's no other questions, I'll continue.
Go ahead.
Another change item related to parks and trails is our forest campground receipts, where those dollars are appropriated. Currently, our state forest campgrounds are located, as the title says, throughout the state forest system. Some of them are on school trust lands. Some of them are on state-acquired lands. Currently, the ones that are on school state trust lands are deposited. Those funds, the camping receipts that we generate, are deposited within the school trust fund. Right now, then, the remainder of those dollars from our campgrounds are deposited into the general fund, leaving us no revenue to take care of and maintain these campgrounds. This proposal would deposit the revenues from the state forest campgrounds on non-trust land into the Natural Resources Fund rather than to the general fund. And then again, hopefully statutorily appropriate those funds to the department for the management of these state forest campgrounds throughout the year. Having more stable funding or a more stable funding source to maintain these state forest campgrounds will provide a stronger or a safer, better experience for people using these state forest campgrounds into the future. Mr. Chairman, another change item within this division deals with the Water Rec account. And Parks and Trails Division, Fish and Wildlife Division, there's a lot of dedicated sources of funding that are out there that users pay for specific purposes, and that's where these change items come from. The balance that are in these accounts that a person who has a boat, a snowmobile, an ATV, or goes camping, where those dollars are going. This one, Mr. Chairman, deals with the water recreation account, and what we're asking for is $1 million appropriation in 12 and in 13 to help us deal with our boat access sites and really develop some best management practices for the management of aquatic invasive species. You can see we have over 1,600 public water access sites, which are essential to accessing these waters. This one here in this picture is not too far away from here. It's on the Mississippi River down in St. Paul Park, right by Ashland Refinery there. The Mississippi River is right behind it on the other side of that berm. What we're looking for is to access these dollars to help us develop these BMPs for water accesses. And some of the outcomes we're talking about are demonstration boat wash project sites and in some of the more invasive species lakes, the zebra mussel lakes, Lake Minnetonka, Lake Mille Lacs, Gull Lake. Come up with some pilot projects and work with some private vendors, most likely, do an RFP for this. The state doesn't want to be in the boat washing business, but I know there's probably other people who do. We don't want to assume the liability of washing the Ranger decal off of somebody's bass fishing boat, perhaps, or something like that. So we're going to try to figure out the best way to do this. But it's really something we need to do on the other side of this. It's related to our invasive species boat fee that we have, talking about the enforcement and things like that. This is specifically the capital improvements or that infrastructure needed at the water access sites from these dollars we're looking at. Mr. Chairman, I will move on if there's no other questions. Two change items, just lastly, related to the lottery and lieu dollars, which are the dollars related in lieu is called in lieu because they're in lieu of the sales tax That is collected off of lottery tickets. So there's money that goes into this account that's distributed for the purposes of parks and trails and outdoor heritage. What we're asking for here is $300,000 in 12 and 313 to support park and trail operations and maintenance. And this annual increase will help us meet the outcomes of providing additional maintenance and operation activities within our parks and trails and assist in meeting the growing demand for public services. Related to those dollars, we also operate a grants program that dealing with these dollars for local trail grants, and we're asking for an increase of $100,000 each year for this program. It will allow us to fund an additional 2 to 4 projects annually to meet the growing demand of local communities for trail grants. Again, these would be eligible for parks that are trails specifically statewide. This is a local trail in the Hutchinson area. The demand in FY11, we received about $109 million worth of requests for about $700,000 that we had available. So there's a large demand of these dollars that are out there, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer, if I could stop you for a second. You're asking for all these different different dollar amounts from different accounts, the Water Rec account. We've gone through all these accounts here now this afternoon, and knowing that there's a negative fund balance in those accounts, I'm questioning where the reasoning is that you can asking for money if there isn't anything in the accounts.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what you're looking at right now, but it's our intention to provide you with a spreadsheet that will show balance, mm-hmm. and the beginning balance and the end balance, including these change items for the various accounts that we're talking about once we're done. It's our intention, all the questions that we're recording, to get back to you on. I'm hoping to get to submit to you.
I'm sorry, specifically it was the ATV account, I guess.
The ATV account. Mr. Chairman, there will be language within. We need to do a correction within the gas tax appropriation that will change that balance. In our comments and in my written responses, I'll describe to you in detail what that change will take place and also provide you a summation table, or the committee, a summation table of all the balances in the accounts currently with the change item and then the ending balance. If that makes any sense, Mr.
Yes.
Chairman.
Thanks.
Rather than try to take the time to go through it right now, that would probably be the easiest way to do it. If there's no other questions, Mr. Chairman, we have a few change items within Fish and Wildlife that I believe we didn't get a chance to speak of. So I'm going to just talk about those. We did talk about the budget within the Division of Fish and Wildlife, and we are on track, Mr. Chairman. So right now I'm on page 26 of your handouts, top of page 26 with the pie chart there. And Fish and Wildlife Division has very little general fund. You can see right here it's $1.5 million for the last biennium, most of those dollars being used for fish and wildlife health activities, some of them up in Senator Scoia's district, specifically dealing with bovine TB. The bulk of this was $138 million from the Game and Fish Fund, and then Outdoor Heritage Fund, we had specific purposes for it. The other piece that's general fund within this division being tracked are the treaty payments, which are almost a little bit over $15 million per year. Just to bring to your attention, Mr. Chair, also the federal funds at $8.2 million are the Dingell Johnson, Wallop Perot, Pittman Robertson dollars that come off of federal excise tax on hunting and fishing related equipment. Strategic objectives, I think everybody's really aware of: fish and wildlife population and habitat management, planning, public participation and technical assistance, outreach and education, and also our licensing center and public information systems. Mr. Chairman, last year we sold an easement to Washington County for a bridge that was up there, and the language that would have deposited these dollars into the Game and Fish Fund, unfortunately, it wasn't signed into law. It was passed, but never was made into being signed into law, unfortunately. This change item is a one-time initiative to deposit this $600,000 into the Game and Fish Fund to allow us to purchase lands to replace this land that was lost due to the bridge up in Washington County. Land prepass right outside of Forest Lake, Mr. Chairman, as many of you are traveling home, you probably know exactly which bridge we're talking about. It's right south of the Wayside Rest area, that public Wayside Rest.
Mr. Meyer, can you explain to the group why, when a bill is passed, it's not put into law?
Mr. Chairman, it was vetoed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, all right, you're right.
Trying to be delicate, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, sorry.
So it didn't get passed the governor, then?
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this account, and this will show up on the spreadsheet in many different places. We need to adjust the Fish and Wildlife dedicated accounts that we were appropriated back in last biennium. Some of them went up, some of them went down. I don't have all of them listed on this change item here for you, but what we're basically doing is decreasing the overall amount by a little bit over $500,000 each fiscal year. And I'm going to say it one more time. We're going to ask for these to be statutorily appropriate. Mr. Knopf has a different term for when I ask for those things, but we try to get the ability to manage our dollars as they come in. We can't spend any more money than was in the account, but we do in a lot of these things because of the oversight the legislature has wanted to see and in past history have to come back here every year for these dollars. This proposal specifically in the wildlife acquisition account will decrease that appropriation by $60,000, decrease the deer habitat improvement account by $153,000, the waterfowl habitat improvement account by $100,000, increase the trout and salmon management account by $43,000, decrease the pheasant habitat improvement account by $145,000, increase the wild turkey management account by $70,000, and decrease the walleye stamp account by $185,000. As we know, we forecast all of these accounts based on certain situations and what we think the funding levels will be available at that time. So this proposal just brings in those forecasted amounts, correlates them back, or readjusts them to the actual receipts that we have out there, which is the reason why we would prefer to have them statutorily appropriated. The Budget Oversight Committee that we have, the Citizens Budget Oversight Committee, looks at these accounts very closely, for lack of a better term, keeps us honest. So, but that was one of the issues there. Mr. Chairman, the only general fund change item within the Fish and Wildlife budget, the only general fund activity within the Division of Fish and Wildlife, revolves around an increase of $975,000 per year in general fund for our wildlife health initiatives that we have. And we've talked about these in the past, bovine tuberculosis activities, the chronic wasting disease activities we're doing in southern Minnesota right now, avian influenza, Newcastle disease, and other health issues just becoming more and more prevalent. And we need to make sure that we're dealing with these proactively so as we don't impact the commercial poultry and bovine operations. The activities that we did in conjunction with Senator Scoy, because we moved very quickly and very decisively, helped the state get to where we are today in our TB management. We need to make sure that we have the ability to deal with things like avian influenza or the Newcastle disease virus, things like that, as quickly and efficiently as possible. This proposal would help us do that for monitoring and managing these wildlife health issues. Outcomes include continual cooperative efforts with the Board of Animal Health, Department of Ag, USDA, and the continuation of our monitoring programs for chronic wasting disease, avian influenza, and Newcastle's virus.
Mr. Meyer, a question with CWD, the figure. Different figures have been thrown around, and as we narrow that thing down in south central Minnesota, can you give me an idea what the, or is it not a fair question? What's the cost going to be to eliminate that? I know you can't know whether it's going to eliminate it or not, but what the general cost of that most recent?
Mr. Chairman, members, that's a difficult question to answer. The monitoring, it's going to depend on what we find down there in the coming weeks and or months. If we find no other deer that is positive, it'll be less than if we find an additional animal too. But we're going to have to continue with the monitoring and sampling of that deer herd in that area for quite some time to make sure that no matter what we find out, we know what's there. Those costs can vary dramatically. I can give you a breakdown in our response back as to what we estimate the cost of this first round of surveillance is going to be. Monitoring of harvesting of about 900 deer and then the sampling of those and things of that nature. But realistically, we're going to have to keep that going for several years, if not many more years, just to make sure we're monitoring the herd, not only there, but statewide.
How many have been eradicated so far, and has there been a positive? Obviously, there hasn't been another positive test. Do you know that?
Mr. Chair, members, not to date. I haven't seen the weekend results. I would estimate we're probably over 300 animals right now. The recent snow we had last weekend certainly didn't help at all. We've been focusing, working with private landowners to do that sampling, making sure that there's people who available on food shelves or lists for those animals once they have been tested, or individuals have been keeping them for themselves. But we're soon going to be in a point where we're going to need assistance in getting the deer that we need to before the snow melts. So there'll be another, Mr. Chair, we'll make sure you get another update here within the coming days on where we're at exactly with that. And I'll provide you a more detailed response on some estimates of costs.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, or maybe Senator Skoy, when we had this problem up in your neck of the woods, how many deer did they find after the fact that had it?
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, I don't remember. I think it was 14 positives, something like that. And it was spread out over a couple, 3 years where they found positives. The thing that was a benefit is that it appeared like all the positives were in one age class of animals, so they kind of thought there was one infestation event. And being that they went at it pretty aggressively, thinned the herd out, there weren't any other transmissions is kind of what made that easier. There were no positives last year.
That's about it. Thank you. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Myers. Is this amount that is in the change order adequate to do all of this work that you expected to do?
Mr.
Myers. Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, this is what we've estimated those costs will be for the biennium. So this combined with some other funding that we have available through the Emergency Deer Feeding and Wild Survey Health Management account, which is 50 cents of each deer license goes into this account. So this general fund appropriation combined with some of those other dollars we estimate will be enough funding for the activities that we need to do.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Myers, even if you do find another animal that tests positive?
Mr.
Chair, Senator Higgins, that would probably change things, and I'll include that response with – I'll include what – it's hard to say not knowing, and I don't want to go down a road uncomfortable with – I don't know what those funds would be if we found another animal or if we found two animals, but we can certainly – I'd rather have Dr. Cornicelli here to speak about what those activities management options would be at that point in time.
And then my last question, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Myers, is this a request to put this in the base budget, or is this just one time?
Mr. Chair, members, this will just be one-time appropriation dollars for the biennium.
Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, could I get it documented as to how you come up with these special document at a later time?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, if there's no other questions, I'm going to move on to the Enforcement Division.
I do have one question that I may have asked this before, but part of your budget goes with regards to treaty payments. Can you go give the group an idea how that came about? And I know we're doing that every year, but just give a brief overview of that, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, members, and I will include a detailed response to this as well. Part of my other thing I wanted to make sure you understood is The information I'm going to provide the House Committee on their questions, I'm going to CC you folks on, and I'm going to CC them on your response. I think it just keeps you all on the same page as what questions would be. And they did want to see those actual agreements, so we'll be including detailed information on there. Basically, we have payments that go out to several bands that have been negotiated for either them not harvesting or not exercising the commercial harvest rights or providing access to lands within their reservation boundaries. Boys Fort, Fond du Lac, and Leech Lake, I believe, are the three bands. They are the three bands that we that receive payments for those. And maybe Mr. Knopf can help you if I missed one.
He's saying not Fond du Lac.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, as I remember, Fond du Lac backed out. They were part of the tri-band agreement in northeastern Minnesota when it was Grand Portage, Boys Fort, and Fond du Lac. I think Fond du Lac does not take payments right now, so I think you're just paying the Boys Fort and the one in the very northeastern part. And then the Leech Lake then is that's to pay them for use of the reservation property. Most of Leech Lake is within the reservation boundary.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Knopf.
So, Mr. Knopf, I could ask, these agreements now, they call them agreements, are dated back some years. And are these agreements to go from this day forward without them coming back and asking for appropriation? They don't have to do that. Can you explain that a little bit to the group?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, each of the agreements are for different things. Now, the Leech Lake there was a court decision back in the early 70s over whether or not they could charge or whether or not that non-reservation members could fish on Leech Lake and other parts within the Leech Lake reservation. And what happened there is after the first court decision, the state and the band negotiated an agreement. And the first part of the agreement was there was a special fee that you had to pay. Some of us older people might remember having to pay a special fee to fish on Leech Lake. Walker Bay was outside the reservation, but if you were on the rest of Leech Lake, you had to pay a special license to the band. There was some frustration over that, so then it was negotiated some years later where now it's the state pays a portion, a percentage, and I don't know if Mr. Meyer knows the percentage, it's a percentage of our game and fish sales in the state. That we pay to the Leech Lake band each year, and so it's just based totally on how many game and fish licenses are sold and how much money we raise through that process, and that's there's an open appropriation for that. The tri-band agreement was related to the 1854 treaty, which again there was some concern that the state would lose in court over whether band members could exercise their rights outside of state law. And so in 1988, the DNR brought the legislature an agreement, basically, between the three bands and the state of Minnesota. And so part of the agreement, the state of Minnesota, there are certain dollar amounts that are going to be, and I don't remember the exact detail. I think I probably have a copy in my file cabinet downstairs. But there are certain amounts of money that have to go to each of the three bands to not exercise their rights. Well, about a year into this, Fond du Lac dropped out. They decided not to participate. So they are exercising through agreements with the DNR within that 1854 area. But the Grand Portage and the Boys Fort bands are still living within that agreement. So they still receive payments under this. That's my understanding of how it works.
So they
and it goes forward. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. They are open appropriations to continue payments. And part of the payments are part of the agreement.
So the 1858 agreements, you have notes in your files on that agreement?
Mr. Chairman, I have fairly extensive files on this stuff downstairs.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee about how that process is working? Proceed, Mr.
Meyer. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Enforcement Division, I did have Colonel Conrad here last time to speak with us, but unfortunately he was not able to be here today. Enforcement Division's budget really drives their activities on the ground. So when they're receiving Game and Fish Fund dollars, our four Game and Fish Fund related activities, fisheries, hunting, things like that, Natural Resource Fund appropriations, snowmobile, ATV, water rec account, small amount of general fund within this division that really deals with our Wetland Conservation Act enforcement, our safety enforcement, tornadoes, floods, things of that nature, when we're doing those types of things in conjunction with local communities, those are general fund activities. And there's a small amount of federal funds and special revenue funds. Our strategic objectives at public safety and services always is first and foremost within the department. Our officers are often first responders to flood, fire, other natural disasters. The Wadena tornadoes of last summer, our officers were there immediately, and there for as long as they wanted us there to make sure that one of our advantages of being there provided those local law enforcement officials the ability to go home and deal with their families, their spouses, their houses, their own natural disasters that they were associated with. So we were able there to help assist them do that. Floods in the northwest, northeast, southeast. We have airboats. We're skilled in water safety and rescue. We're there on the spot to try to save people. 35 bridge collapse. We were there immediately afterwards in the water with our equipment, making sure we were helping those local law enforcement agencies as much as possible. Those are all general fund-related activities. Environmental protection is as well. And then the rest, you can see fisheries, game protection, and recreational enforcement safety training. Mr. Chairman, one of the big initiatives we have right now within the governor's budget is to allow us to the ability to host two training academies this biennium. Right now, you can see we have 25 vacancies, and we expect six more to occur within the next 2 years. And this proposal would allow us to conduct a conservation officer academy, maintain our enforcement at the current complement, actually the complement we've had for many decades of field stations that are out there, allow us to continue the public safeguard and preserve Minnesota's quality of fish and game populations. What we're looking for here, as you can see, the first year funding appropriation out of the Game and Fish Fund of $920,000 in FY12. And then 2.565 in FY13, allowing us to have this academy. So natural resource funds will be supporting these activities as well. Without this, we will be reaching a vacancy rate of 20% by 2014. This initiative will allow us to keep that vacancy rate 10% or lower. Again, as I said, fill 20 to 25 vacancies. The positions would be determined based upon resource availability, population, and public utilization levels, or where the people are recreating throughout the state. This is tied to our hunting and fishing license fee proposal as well, though, because since the Game and Fish Fund is critical to enforcement operations, we need to make sure that there's solvency within the fund to maintain our current level of operations.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Myers, and how is this... related to, we talk about environmental stuff, about our invasive species and this type of. If we're indeed going to try to eradicate ourselves, then we're going to have to do a lot of additional enforcement. Is this necessary? I would assume so. But is it going to involve a lot of extra enforcement?
Mr. Chairman, members, and Senator Saxon, thank you for that question. It's not often I thank people for asking me questions, but it's a great point. That's a huge issue that we need to face. And our invasive species funding proposal will double, if not more, our enforcement hours. And we're actually going to see a policy bill coming out very shortly that we'll need your help with. That will give us some added enforcement ability or enforcement opportunities to change our watercraft inspection program, which right now is just interns over the summer inspecting the outside of your boat for aquatic plants, to allow us the ability, if we see some indicators, to actually look into a person's boat and make sure that it's drained and that there's no water and things like that they're transporting, and to help them get that boat clean. But we will need to maintain at least our current complement of enforcement officers. So the two are linked together at some degree.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, I'm unfamiliar with a conservation academy. How often are they done? And can you just give me an idea what goes on and who's eligible or what students are?
Mr. Meyer, if I can also add to that question, when you're talking about this amount of people going to an academy, I understand, but what if you have five retire 2 years from now? When do you have your academy? Do you wait till you have 10, 15, 20?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kulas, those are great questions. And, yes, we try to make sure that we have – basically, if we can get about 12 people, 10 to 12 people, it seems to work the best for an academy. I don't want to say it's conservation officer boot camp, but it's something like that where it – we often hold them – lately we've been having them up at Camp Ripley where they stay for – I think it's about 5 to 6 months. And it's making sure that they understand everything that they do, game and fish identification – operation and safe operation and laws of ATVs, snowmobiles, boats, the laws that are there as well, the game of fish laws, ride-alongs, and then finally that signing on or teaming up with another conservation officer for some time. Most of the dollars are associated with just the salary costs with that level of training. So, for example, it's 6 months of some of our staff providing that hands-on training experience. There's also firearms and vehicle med. Our workforce that we hire usually has some type of law enforcement or criminal justice background. A lot of them come from the highway patrol or local sheriff. Some of them don't have that, but they have a enforcement degree, a college degree, so they need that hands-on training. So it's really that day-to-day learning mentoring program that we have. So we usually wait till we get a sufficient amount, try to do it, you know, 1 or 2 years back to back. But the enforcement officers have, just like any other law enforcement officer, they're part of the Police Officers Association. So there are retirement criteria that they can reach. Once they reach a certain age, they're eligible to retire. And this is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week job for our COs, and many of them like to return to civilian life after retirement. So we do have a turnover that occurs. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of time and training to get them where we need them to be.
Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, are they also – do they acquire and receive a police officer's license in Minnesota, I think, so they can enforce any laws in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chair – pretty much, yes. Implied consent gets a little tricky, but we do have that authority. We work within we work with local law enforcement on most of those activities, though.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions related to this, but not specifically a piece of this, is related to a change item from last session. Our police officer training account, or the KT surcharge, is a percentage of each game and fish violation that is paid statewide went to the KT surcharge account. These dollars were never actually appropriated to the department. Last year we had a change item. It probably wasn't the best time to move forward with it, but a change item related to accessing these dollars, and the balance, unfortunately, was zeroed out to the general fund. It was about a $900,000 balance. Our hope was to access those dollars to have this training academy. This year, we're asking to have those dollars deposited into the police officer training account to help us with training. We have annual training that needs to occur, and then we will also make sure that we can use these dollars when available for future academies as well. So that the dollars accrue in the account. They accrued in the account over a decade or more. We just never accessed them, and then they were moved forward to help balance the general fund budget last year. But now we're asking for the account to be set up within the natural resources account, I believe, and then in the game of fish fund. I'm sorry, and then use those dollars for our enforcement training activities. Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions, the operations support budget. And we talked about the change item related to this part of the budget in the beginning of this presentation. But just real quickly, let me remind you of the budget that we have in this part of the department. The Outdoor Heritage Fund, $55.1 million. Those aren't used for operation support. These are the dollars that the department passes through to all of the people that the bills that you guys will pass here in the coming weeks and months. This is the pass-through activities of the department, our grant-making authorities, making sure that when you appropriate funds to a non-governmental organization or another governmental entity, they are granted in accordance with state statute, the best management practices that are out there, and the accountability and transparency is followed through, and we deal with those on a day-to-day basis. All of the grant-making activities that we do pass through Parks and Trails Fund. You can see the Environmental Trust Fund. Federal dollars also go into this department or this area of our budget. Game and Fish Fund, and General Fund at $3.1 million. Some of the other higher activities that are also funded out of here include the Commissioner's Office and our regional operations with regional headquarters located in Bemidji, Grand Rapids, New Ulm, and St. Paul.
Excuse me, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, up until this biennium, is that the pass-through budget? Is that where the PILT would have come through up until this biennium? Or
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson.
Meyer.
No, that the PILT payment is actually tracked within the Division of Lands and Minerals. So if you look at the Division of Lands and Minerals, and it becomes confusing because if you look at appropriations, it's one thing because the money is appropriated to the department for the payment in lieu of taxes. But then our expenditures don't line up because we transfer those dollars to the Department of Revenue. So our budget looks like we're getting $45 million more than it is. And the Department of Revenue's budget, I would assume, looks like they're spending $45 million, and they have. So that'll be something that the committees are looking to rectify as you're talking and tracking those dollars. And we're working through the governor's budget process in the language to hopefully address that shift to the Department of Revenue. We're still working on that, make sure it works out right. The plan would be that we would still be involved with the program, calculating that what the payment should be, but the dollars would actually be appropriated and expended by the Department of Revenue to solve that kind of clarify that issue more so than anything else. Mr. Chairman, that ends my presentation. Sorry to say. I really enjoyed being here today. If there's no other questions, we will be getting our comments to you as soon as possible. And like I said, making sure that you understand what the other body's questions and comments are as well. Please feel free to contact me directly. I know some of our division staff have been meeting with you folks one-on-one. We'll be back to talk about the Clean Water Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, and answer any questions you may have in the coming week. So,
Mr. Meyer, to understand, you've given this presentation to the House, and they have questions and concerns that you're addressing, and you're going to CC those to us as well then.
Mr. Chair, yes, sir. I would assume you would like to see those.
Yes.
Rather than have our staff here and bring them up and answer questions, we felt it was a more effective use of our time and theirs to record the questions and then provide them back to you in detail so you have those. Hopefully that works out for all of us, but I'm assuming it will.
I did have one more question. I just happened to think of it, Mr. Meyer. When you talked about raising fees, we did talk about that in the previous presentation. Well, if you're going to raise fishing fees, getting back to the agreements with the with Leech Lake and so on, were those increases figured in your budget? Because obviously they're going to go up as well. It's a certain percentage of those increases go up.
Mr. Chairman, I need to get back to you
Would
on
you
that.
Please? Yes.
I'm not sure if it's a certain percentage of each license or an amount of per license, and I just need to look at that and calculate what that increase would be based upon the fee.
Please do that. Any other questions from the committee? If not, thank you very much for the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time.
Nothing else before the committee. The committee is adjourned.